Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for listening in today. My name is Jensen Brooks, and this is the Council of Elders Call-In Talk Show for November 19th, 2022. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening today. We have an exciting guest today, Dr. Minani Kweku, we have some very interesting topics to talk about today. But before we get started with the show, let me just give you a background on the Council of Elders concept. It's simply a concept where elders in the community will try to reach out and communicate with younger people, try to help them navigate through life and avoid some of the pitfalls which can affect us all. And on the other hand, learn from them because they have ideas and information that is very important. So with that started with our show today. Today we have Dr. Minani Kweku. Dr. Kweku has a degree in psychology. He has a master's degree in social work. He spent 45 years working in the Bay Area, creating and running programs for men, women, and families. He's written two books. One is Ordinary Dads in Search of Manhood, and also he's written a book called Whiteout, which deals with how black thought is overridden by white philosophy. He teaches classes on anger management, parenting roles of men and women, alcohol and drug recovery, behavior modification classes, among others. Dr. Kweku, I'm so glad to have you on the show today. I know you're a busy man, so just glad to have you. Welcome to the Council of Elders Call-In Talk Show.
Thank you very much, Brother Brooks. It's a pleasure coming on here. It's always good to feel that you're making a contribution, and I feel like if I can share some information or thought that may benefit or help somebody's life, improve somebody's social status, then I'm 100% on in on that. So thank you for inviting me.
Right, it's a pleasure. Now, before we get started, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Well, to be honest, I've been in the Bay Area for over 50 years. I've been in the, public health. I've worked with children, emotionally disturbed children. I've worked in for Alameda County Mental Health Department for a number of years. I worked for East Oakland Mental Health. I worked at the East Oakland Youth Development Center. We developed programs myself along with a group of other people, not just me by myself, worked to implement programs to support children that live in these blighted areas where the schools were poor, where they were having poor scores, very poor scores coming out. Kids were failing. Kids were in the eighth and ninth grade and still couldn't read and write. So we did a lot of work around that time to involve the community in their children's education and hold these administrators of that handled all this money for education, hold them accountable. So I spent a lot of years doing that and studying at the same time. But, you know, I really basically got my start back on the East Coast. You know, in fact, just before Malcolm X got killed, I had joined up with the OAAU, the Organization for African American Unity. And so from that point on, it's been my objective to be instrumental in trying to bring that that process into reality, because he was murdered before we were able to really get off the ground and start moving, start to dealing with people at that level. So, my work just became an extension of that. You know, I felt like the best way to get people to understand that we have to stand up and that we deserve to have a better life is to teach them how to re-educate themselves. You know, I read a book, I don't know if you ever heard of it, called The Miseducation of the Negro.
Carter G.
It was
Wilson,
written,
yes, I've read.
Was one of the emphasis in my thinking that, okay, what is education? And education should be about the business of, you know, if your education doesn't make your life better, then there's something wrong with that education. And not only that, then we have to deal with where we are and who we are. And if you were to ask the average John Doe black man, black woman in America, say, who are you? They would not be able to answer that question intelligently, you know, because we are so conditioned and trained and manipulated by the educational system and this European culture, so we have kind of lost contact with who we really are. If you were to go back in the 30s and the 40s, and those people who had came out of slavery and stuff, you know, you would see that they had much more gravitas when it comes to how a family dynamic is supposed to be. Even though they lived in slavery and they lived in Jim Crow, black people were connected to each other. Black people had formed communities. That's why you had the Tulsas, the Rosewoods, the St. Louis's. You had all these black towns spring up and became very efficient in taking care of their own community. Well, the thing about it is that's because they knew where they came from. They knew who they were. Now people have, I say, they've been educated out of being self and educated into being somebody else. Or you have to at least give the impression that you want to be like them in order to be accepted. In this society now, a big word is acceptance, you know, and most people, they are not accepted for who they are. They're accepted for who they pretend to be. If I want to be accepted by a certain group, guess what I have to do? I have to start acting like that group. I have to start emulating them and pretending that I like the same things that they like. And so it's a long, tedious process to get there. We didn't get there overnight, so we're not going to fix it overnight. But I've always been, you know, focused on when I leave out of my door every day is can I share some information with another person that will get them on the path to assisting us in reclaiming our traditional heritage and our tradition and our culture.
Right. Let me just remind the audience, as you're listening today, if you have a question or comment for Dr. Kwaku, you can press the number one on your phone, and he can talk to you about your question or comment. Dr. Kwaku, you mentioned the Organization of African American Unity. Was that an organization that Malcolm X started?
Yes. When Malcolm came back from Mecca after he had left Elijah Muhammad and the so-called black Muslims, he started his own organization, and that was the first time I ever joined up with anything in my life. And I was in Boston at the time, and I joined up with the brothers and were sitting there prepared to meet with him the next night after he got killed in Boston. But that didn't materialize. But it did not stop us, the people who really gravitated toward Malcolm's philosophy, which was we have to be self-sufficient, we have to police our communities, we have to educate our communities, and we have to be in control of our communities. And like if you heard Malcolm speak at the end there, he said, you know, white people can't join us. He wasn't talking about separatism. He said they can support us, but they can't join us because we have to be the decision makers in what goes on in our community. And the reason why we're so disorganized and in disarray at this time is because basically we don't control anything. We don't control the politics. We don't control the schools. We don't control anything in our community. We don't control the economics because everybody else is making money off of African people. So it's going to take a complete reversal of this educational process to get us back to understand that that's what we need to do. There's no need to complain about how somebody treats you when you keep spending all of your money with them. So it's work, you know, that sometimes people are not willing to do. You take, like, I will go out of my way. I will drive 10, 15 miles to go and buy things that I need because I can buy them from black people. A lot of people won't do that. Well, it's going to cost me more money if I go over there. But when all of your money is going to support a system that depresses your people, that make police states out of your communities, and then you stand around and you complain about why it's happening. It's happening because you're contributing to it. If you're giving me all of my money, guess what's happening? I have all of your political power. And so we have to re-educate people to understand that we can stand on our own two legs. As the sister said, every tub has to stand on his own bottom. Black folks in America, we're the only group that does not do that. And I think that the thing that's going on with Kyrie Irving and the Brooklyn Nets and Yee, how they shut people. These guys are making millions of dollars, but they're told either shut up or we'll cut your money off. But see, what if we own those companies? What if we control those companies that was managing all these guys that's making millions, all these women that's making all this money? We don't. All of that money goes to support a system that continues to practice racist stuff on our people. So we got to wake up. That's what he would want us to continue to do. I work with Professor James Small. I work with a lot of the brothers. And until we get that message across to our people, we will be spinning. We'll be like a dog chasing his tail. We'll be going around in circles. So, you know, it's all about education. It's all about reclaiming who you are. It's all about who defining. What is your definition of who you are? And we have to figure that out for ourselves. So the only way that's going to happen is if they get enough exposure, if shows like yours. I work with two or three other shows. I work with a TV show out of Oakland, TPNG. Where we are doing a show called Hot Toddy, where we get on there and we talk about the issues. We move the show to different places in the community, give the community an opportunity to come in and ask questions. How can I get involved? How can I change my life? That's the objective. That's what my objective is. And, you know, I'm not seeking to be rich. I'm seeking to be a part of something that I feel good about.
Right. Well, I'd like to talk a little about some of the classes that you teach. Okay, looks like we got a caller here in the 314 area code. Caller in the 314, please state your name, your question or comment, and where you're calling from.
This is Pianchi. Kwaku. From a Friday-born child to a Wednesday-born child, how you been doing?
Oh, brother, hey, how you doing? I'm doing wonderful, brother. Wonderful. How you doing?
I'm doing well myself. But, you know, your philosophy and your program is what need to be if the change is going to come with the people or the ethnic group that's so often talked about.
Right.
It's not going to be done from others outside. Nigerians are not going to teach your children how to take power away from theirs. This ain't going to happen. It doesn't happen in the animal world.
Yeah.
But you made mention about a program you have in Oakland, I think you said. What did you say the name of that program was?
It's not just in Oakland. We have an organization called Family Solution, Inc. And what we try to do is to teach all of these basic life skills and to promote people to re-educate themselves about their condition, you know, because, you know, people will be knocking on your door and calling your phone every day with all kinds of social, mental health issues. That's become the primary thing. Now, every time you look around the DSM-5, they've added a new disease. It's bipolar, it's this, it's that, and it's post-traumatic stress disorder, it's ADHD. You know, these are just made-up names for things that have no validity to them. What's wrong is the sickness that lies within us is that we don't know who we are. We're miseducated, and we are raising it. Yes, go ahead.
I think you used the word toddy, didn't you?
Used the word what?
Hot toddy. I think you used the word hot toddy.
Yeah, it's a show that we're developing with a TV station. A brother owns this small station.
Let me tell you something. You went way back to pull out the word hot toddy. But I want to ask you a question with this incident with some celebrities with the youth anti-Semite. My question is this. Where is the normal gatekeepers? Where is the NAACP and those other diatribes on this issue? Now, my position is that those young people should have consulted with the elders of the community that know more about the topic than what they do, apparently, because they stepped out there the way they did, which is nothing wrong because it has been talked about in the past, and they actually – it was settled as far back as the 1970s. But where are those organizations that to come out and defend these two men? Where are the marches and the protests, if you understand what I'm saying? They're absent, not to be heard.
Well, yeah, because they're not going to challenge the establishment. These people, they control the wealth of America. They control the wealth of Israel. And, you know, I mean, if people just studied the Bible – and do it efficiently and study history along with it. What do we have over in Ethiopia? We have the Ethiopians, the so-called Hebrews. There's no such thing as a Jew, but they're Hebrews. They were dominant.
Yeah, they're in Gondar.
Yeah, they're everywhere. They're
in Gondar.
But, so how can it be anti-Semite for saying that I am a Hebrew?
Well, there's a lot to that, and I don't want to take up no more time of Jansen's show, but I really appreciate what I hear that you continue to do. Man, you still got a lot of breath in you. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it. Appreciate it.
What? By the way,
thank you,
Jansen. Do you guys know each other?
Do what?
Have you guys met before?
No, he just didn't recognize
me. Well, we met before. You just didn't know who I was. But, we've met before.
Okay, where are you from?
Yeah, we old wood. We've been around a long time.
Yeah. Well, if you know me, you know we've been doing this a long time.
Yeah, you have. Keep up doing the good work, man.
I appreciate it, brother. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
All right, thank you, Fionke. Let's see. Yeah, we were going to talk about some of the things that you do in your work. One is anger management, and I wanted to talk a few minutes about that. You know, what can we as individuals do to manage our anger? Are there any techniques or tips that you can offer? And then we'll talk about a little about parenting roles and alcohol and drug recovery and behavior modification. And by the way, if anybody has a question or comment, please press number one on your phone. You can ask a question or make a comment. But let's talk a little bit about anger management. Dr. Kwaku.
Let's talk about anger management. What is anger? You know, you got different philosophies. There are some people saying it's natural. It's natural to, it's almost like a natural response to something that you're feeling intimidated by, or frightened by, or whatever. But it is an emotion. It is an emotion, just like being happy is an emotion. But if you see somebody going around all day long and they looking up at the sky laughing, you think there's something wrong with them. You're ready to call somebody and say, look, this guy needs help. And the same way that, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. Anger can be a positive and a negative. You know, because if somebody is doing something to hurt you or your family or your community and you get angry, I'm sure that Martin Luther King was angry about what was going on in the community. Malcolm X was angry about what's going on, which gave them the impetus to do what they did. So what I want people to understand is that it is a natural emotion, but you have to be in control of that. If I am angry and I'm so angry that I can't think straight, I'm probably going to wind up with a negative response. You understand what I'm saying? Now, if I get angry and do something to make something positive happen out of that, then I'm using it for the benefit that it was supposed to be used for in the first place. But like I say, it's an emotion. You get upset. And where I tell people, you know, in anger class is that if you are angry, the best way to fix this is to put you in a situation where you're in a win-win situation. If you get angry at somebody in the grocery store and you knock somebody down, you're going to jail. That is not a good outcome. That's not a positive outcome. But you have to find other ways to deal with your anger. You have to be able to communicate at a high level, because most people get really angry because they can't articulate what they really want to say, you know, over their feelings. Sometimes their feelings becomes the impetus for whatever goes on. You can't allow your emotions to dictate what your mouth say. You have to give thought to that. If somebody makes you angry, you know, it's okay. If you made me angry, if I were to call you, Brother Brooks, you said something that made me angry, and I just wanted to clarify with you and find out what you meant. We sit down and we have dialogue. We both walk away, you know, in a peaceful mood. And so being angry, there's nothing wrong with people getting angry, but use it for your benefit. Use it to develop a positive outcome. But if you do something, if you get angry, you wind up in jail. Or if you get angry, you wind up hurting somebody. And like people have, even parents have been brought into court for abusing their kids because they get angry. That's not a positive outcome. You have to use it for the way it was intended to be used. You know, if something is wrong, then you have to be a great communicator. You have to elevate your thinking. It's called mindset. Have you heard people use the term mindset? The mindset should be, I'm going to do the best thing that works out for everybody involved. And that requires mindset. But what does, be it anger, mindset, dealing with all of the inconsistencies in society, that means that you have to study. That means you have to pray. That means, and I always suggest to people, practice yoga, practice meditation. Do what you need to do to keep you in a calm state of being so that you don't overreact when situations come up. So that's what it really boils down to. It's an emotion. And people sometimes let their emotions rule. And when your emotions rule, you usually wind up being on the losing end of the proposition. So just it's a behavior that you can change. You know, if you come out of a home where people are constantly screaming, hollering, cursing, and every time something happens, people get angry and go to cursing people out, that's probably going to be the way you react because you're learning it. It's a learned behavior. So how you respond to things, if you come out of a home where there's calmness, where your mother and father, whoever your caretakers are doing things by sitting down and having a conversation with you versus the opposite that I've just spoke about, you're probably going to be the kind of person that operates from that vein. And so all of these things that we do, learned behavior, substance abuse, addiction. These are all learned behaviors. We learn them and we use them as kind of a protection mechanism. But when you get angry and you wind up in jail, you get angry and you wind up hitting your wife, or you get angry and you wind up hitting your child, you're not using, that's no longer a viable, acceptable process, you know, because you're going to wind up on the negative end of the proposition. So just think about it. You can meditate. You get, what I do is I read, you know, whenever, a lot of times when I'm thinking about something and it's really bothering me, I'll get a good book and I'll read it. And it calms me right down. If you're not the person who, you know, can sit down and meditate and who is connected spiritually, because I believe very strongly in spirituality. All of these things could not be if you don't have your spirituality in check. Now, there may be people out there, well, I don't believe in no God, I don't believe in this, and I don't believe in that. But let's be clear about one thing. Each one of us, you, me, everyone, we are connected spiritually whether we want to be or not, because we were created by the creator of the universe and the spirit was breathed into us. It was planted in us. So we don't have any control over it. What we do have control over is our acceptance or rejection of that. People look at us and say, okay, we're physical. Most of us think of ourselves as just being physical beings. But you're also a spiritual being. You are a psychological being. What is mental health? Mental health is psychology. Mental is psychology. Every time you have a thought that goes through your mind, that's mental. So we have to start seeing these things and understanding who we are. And that's what I'm talking about when I say we need to know who we are. We need to understand who we are, because we are not just flesh and blood. We are spiritual beings capable. I heard a guy talk a few weeks ago, and it made a lot of sense to me. He said, I am a physical being, you know, waiting to return to a godly being. Or I'm a godly being having a human experience. We are one with the Creator. We are one with God. God created man and woman in his image. Why would we believe that we are anything less? Why would we believe that we're anything less than what our Creator made us to be? Certainly,
right, right. Well,
we
you
would
know,
not.
You know, Dr. Kwaku, you know, for people to believe what you're saying, they have to be taught that. And I find that a lot of our churches, that we talk about salvation and we talk about don't sin and this and that, but some of the things that you're talking about now would be almost heresy in some of the churches. And so talk about miseducation. So.
I'm an ordained minister, and I used to work with a couple of people in the Oakland area in churches. I was associate pastor church, and I won't give out no name or nothing. But they didn't like it because this is what I wanted to bring forth. And let me just tell you something. The people appreciated it. The people appreciated it. But these guys are no different than politicians. They want to maintain their power base. Their power base is coming in here, bringing money in to keep building bigger and better churches, but yet and still the community is still suffering. I found it so much, it's discouraging for me to be a minister and to go in and just bring a sermon that keeps people cocooned in this here valley of non-movement. In other words, these people sitting up in the church, their grandkids is getting shot outside the doors of the church. These people sitting up in the church, you're putting money in every day. Their kids are becoming drug addicts and winding up in the prisons. So how are we serving the community when we are only giving them half of the truth or part of the truth? And making people feel like somehow they're helpless to change this dynamic, can change whatever you think. You can change your mind. You can change the direction of a community just by changing your mind. You can change the direction of what goes on in your household by changing your mind. So this is no longer going to be acceptable in my household, and it will stop right there. The community is an extension of your home. And if your churches and these people are not all working together, your schools and systems, are not all working together, then we are never going to be safe. We're never going to be comfortable. Our kids are going to be constantly. All the half of the people in the country now is on some kind of medication because they're creating all these here so-called behavior, not behavior, but mental health issues. You know,
right.
Used to be you get depressed, you take a walk or do something to get yourself out of that depression. Now they put you on a pill. You know, if you're a little anxious, I remember when I was a kid, we was anxious. We couldn't stay in our seats either. But they didn't label us ADHD and put us on some kind of drug. So we have what we're living in, what people might refer to as, but we are going backwards in terms of how we interact with each other and who and how we do not do what's expected of us. We're not being good parents. We're not being good people to guard the rails. We are not people who are protecting our communities. Because one of the things, because we believe we have no power. And the only way have power is to be in contact with your creative force. Whatever that
is. Dr. Kwaku, that leads a good segue into another class that you teach, which is parenting roles for men and women. Can you talk about that a little bit, parenting roles for men and parenting roles for women?
Well, but the thing of it is that we bring children in the world. No child should have to be, and I know that sometimes that can't be helped and sometimes circumstances create things. But even if you, what I teach guys and I teach women too, even if you are not with the person that you have children by, you still have a full responsibility to make sure that the well-being, the psychological health of those children becomes paramount. You can decide tomorrow that you don't want to be with your wife or your husband, but you cannot decide tomorrow that you don't want your kids to be healthy. So the thing about it is that your role is to be consistent in being there and supporting that. A child does not just need a mother. They need both parents. They need the male aspect of the relationship, and they need the feminine aspect of the relationship. They need both. That's why you'll see a lot of times where these boys that are raised up by women and the women let them take control of them, and before you know it, they think they're telling their mother what to do. Or you'll find girls without fathers, and one of the things that they studies they done is these girls used to go out and find these bad boys in the community to associate themselves with. So we have a responsibility to be there and to be consistent and to give them what they need. They need love. They need attention. But they also need somebody that can sit down and guide them, not to wait till they get in trouble in school or wait till they go out in the community and get with some boy and get pregnant or wait till your boy gets some girl pregnant. But before then, your job is to groom them to be community stewards. You are the next generation who's going to be ruling this community. And so both parents have a responsibility in that. And I've seen a lot of women that once they break up with a guy, for whatever the reason, it doesn't matter. I'm not going to let him see the children anymore. Well, who do you think you're hurting? You're hurting the children. Because if they don't have a positive direction from a male influence from their father, they're going to take it out on somebody. And more than likely, they're going to probably take it out on the mother. I mean, and I know that there are exceptions to the rule. Sometimes there are kids who come up out of those environments and they go on to be what people may classify as being very successful. But the masses of them have some trouble along the way. Because if they didn't, you know, people being medicated, self-medicated, are being prescribed by doctors, psychologists, people being medicated by those people demonstrates that we have a serious mental health problem. Because like I said before, every thought, every, you know, in your go through your skull is mental. And the minute that you get to a state where you don't feel like you're in control of those thoughts, guess what? The answer always seems to be go see the doctor. The doctor prescribes this medication. Very rarely, and you do have some now that do, Very rarely will they look at you and say, look, let's sit down and develop a holistic approach to what's going on with you. Maybe you need to change your diet. Maybe you need to stop doing some of the things that you do. You know, maybe, you know, there are other alternatives to taking medicine. I know that there are situations sometimes physically where people need to take medicine. They may have some serious illness. But here's the real deal. If people have an illness, even when you have an illness, it's just like if somebody gets cancer. You go in for treatment. And I'm sure you've heard this too. Sometimes the treatment is just as ravishing of the body as the cancer or the disease that you're suffering from. And it's the same way with medications. If you a doctor prescribes a medication for you, what is one thing they always say? Well, we need to have you talk to a doctor over here about how this medication affects you. Because they know there are side effects. How many times have you looked at the TV and they tell you, here's a medicine here for you, and then they find out, well, 5 years later, oh, we found out this medicine causes cancer, or we find out that this medicine causes something. So all of these medications have a distinct, and so we have to teach people how to return to the holistic approach. You know, if you go, and I tell people all the time, if you go to your doctor, it's not your doctor, it's you and your doctor. You tell your doctor what's wrong with you. You tell your doctor what the results that you expect to get. Because most of the 9 times out of 10, they're sitting there, and unless it's something that's obvious, they got to speculate about what they think could possibly be wrong with you. You know, they run tests, and they do all of these things, and they say, well, we don't see anything, but we know you're having this pain. We know you're having, you know, this issue. So we have to learn how to be our own physician, not exclude the doctors, but when we have, it's a team effort. If I go see my doctor, that's my doctor, I'm having a pain here. I don't know what it is. It keeps bothering me, and I've tried X, Y, Z, and it's not working. Maybe you can make some suggestions. They may give you some suggestions. They may give you some medication, or you might decide, well, you know, I don't really want to take the medication unless I know exactly what the side effects are going to be or what kind of harm it's going to do to me. All of the things that I'm talking about, Brother Brooks, has to do with a person educating themselves. You know, you have to know, you have to learn how to be a good parent. It's on-the-job training. But if you come out of an environment where parenting was negative, or you had a negative view, or your parents treated you like you was whatever, you know, you're probably going to treat your kids the same way. You pass those negative behaviors down through generations.
So, Dr. Kwaku, what advice would you give to grandparents?
Well, see, grandparents have, you know, one of the things, I have a positive, really positive thing about grandmothers because of my own grandmother and how when we were wearing shoes with holes in them and clothes with holes in them and didn't hardly have enough to change clothes. And sometimes somebody had to go to school and somebody had to stay home because you didn't have clothes for both parties, you know. But my grandmother and them always made us feel good about who we were. If you went to school, they made you feel like, I'm the smartest tool in the deck here. I'm the smartest tool in the tool shed. They made you feel that way. And it's called what people refer to now, I'm sure you've heard the term motivational interviewing. Well, motivational interviewing is a process by which you encourage and motivate people to change, to do things for the betterment of themselves. Kids, when they leave,
you know
home
what?
In the morning,
I have never heard of that term. I want you to highlight that a little bit for us, a little bit more.
Yeah,
motivation interviewing.
A lot of agencies use it now. Somebody come in to see you. They got a problem, but they've given up. They don't know how to fix it. You know, they don't know how to meditate. They don't know how to calm down, you know, like, so to speak. When they get upset, they just completely blow a gasket. You use motivational interviewing to show people how important they are, how viable they are, how they are no different than everybody else on this planet. You're just as good. There's no one better than you. There's no one lower than you. It's a thing where you, a tool that you use to make people feel good about who they are and give them back their power. You know, because people usually, when by the time people come in to see a therapist or a counselor, it's either because the system or the court or somebody has directed them to come, or they're at their wit's end. They're feeling helpless. So my job, or your job, or whoever it is that's the counselor, therapist, or whatever, is to make, when that person leaves, to give that person some tools and some things that they can practice after they leave your office. And your job is to give them tools, and that's all motivational interviewing is. I want you to feel good. Why don't you feel good about yourself? Why are you doing these things that are detrimental to your well-being? Why are you destroying yourself by putting drugs in your body like that when you know they're killing you? Because people don't feel good about who they are. And motivational interviewing is a tool that can be used to transform, to get a person to see the positive aspects of who they are and teach them how to build on that. Now, it goes a lot deeper than that, because if you're working with somebody who has a lot of issues, then you have to put together a program by which they can recover. It's like if you were sick and the doctor said, well, you need about 3 months of bed rest to get well, you go and you do that and you start feeling better. Well, this is psychological. This is mental. So what you have to do is put together maybe a writing program. Get them to start writing down things or writing down their feelings, or get them to deal with some of the issues. A lot of people refer to it as psychotherapy, dealing with all those issues, that things that happened to them when they were young. Sometimes you have to take people back to their childhood because behaviors are usually stemming from how a person was brought up, how they were raised, how they were taught, how they were abused. Person is made to feel like they're unimportant. If you feel that your parents didn't love you, how would you feel about yourself? And so what happens is a lot of times parents give the illusion, well, I love my child, but no, saying it is not enough. The child has to feel it. The child has to feel it. I have worked with kids who were molested when they were 3, 4, 5 years old in system, and work with them for 6 or 7 months and see a smile on their face from somebody treating them right, somebody just letting them know that they're cared about. So everything that happens to us affects who we are and what we develop into being. And so all we're doing is just going back, raking the, you know, stirring the coals a little bit. It's okay. When did this start happening? Or how did this? I had a young lady, and the mother and father separated, and the child was like 13 or 14, and the mother, the school was complaining because after the mother and father separated, the child started doing poorly in school. So what the mother did, they told her, well, if you don't get her straight now, we're going to have to put her out. We're going to have to suspend her. So rather than suspend her, she took her to see the school psychiatrist, school counselor, and the school counselor referred her to a psychiatrist. Guess what? The psychiatrist put her on some psychotic medication. But here's the deal. Here's the deal. And the child still was unresponsive because they was nodding out at school from the drug, you know, that the doctor was giving them. So the mother called me and said, Dr. Quaker, I don't know what to do. I'm working 2 jobs. They're going to put her out of school, and I don't know how I'm going to maintain. So I said, well, look, when did the child start experiencing this? Because they told me she had been a straight-A student before. She was doing really well. And then all of a sudden, when the mother and father separate, child starts doing poorly. But that was never brought up. And the question with the psychiatrist who administered this medication, what they did was just put her on the medication just to keep her in school. So the mother told me that she started acting like that when her father moved to Atlanta because they lived here in the Bay Area, you know. And so I thought, oh, okay. I said, well, did you tell the psychiatrist that? She says, yes. She said, but I don't know how to talk to those people. I said, will you go with me the next time we have a meeting and sit down and talk for me? I said, yeah, I'll go with you, you know. So I went with the mother and the daughter to see the psychiatrist. And you know, because she was supposed to see this child once a week or something like that for counseling. But when we get in there, I let the mother do her thing, and the child was not saying anything. She was sitting there like a zombie. And I asked the psychiatrist, I said, why did you put her on this medication? And you know what she told me?
What?
She said, I put her on it because her mother didn't object. I don't know any book in the world where that's a diagnosis, you know? So I said, oh, and then guess what she tried to do? I was working for this organization. She tried to get me fired because I questioned her motives behind putting this child on medication. But what I did was I wrote a letter and I let them know that I was going to be suing them and Contra Costa County and the doctor who wrote this negative stuff about me because I was supporting my client. They took that child off that medication. I made sure that her mother made sure that that child was able to talk to her father 2 or 3 times a week, even though he was in Atlanta, and even, you know, put her on the road to having her when school was out on school break to send her to Atlanta to spend time with her father. It turns out that all was wrong with the child. She was upset because her father was no longer there. To keep her in the school system was to medicate her so she could stay in the school so they could continue to get money for that seat being filled. So there's just so many extenuating situations that come up. And that's just one. But I can, hundreds of cases I've experienced like that over the years. And I've come to the conclusion that we have got to meet the people where they are. We got to go in the homes. We got to teach people proper parenting skills. We got to get, if they want to get their children back, if you don't want your children growing up being disrespectful to you and people in the street, that you have got to take control of your household. And so many times now, one of the things I'm seeing is that parents don't have any control. Children pretty much do what they want to do. And some of them have gotten to the point where they disrespect their parents. I've had kids who have jumped on their parents, you know, and they ask, well, let me just tell you this. I have to tell you this. If your child strikes you, the mother, father in that household, something, you have done something wrong. Because no child is just going to grow up in a normal situation and all of a sudden one day decide, I'm going to slap my mother. You understand what I'm saying? It just doesn't happen. So we have to go back and recoup. That doesn't mean you got to get a stick and beat nobody to death. It's that we have got to be greater communicators than we've ever been. Because there's so many, the kids are exposed to so many things out here. The media outlets are
active. Doctor, let me say this. nowadays, parents don't want to hardly, you know, thank their kids and nothing because the kids are being told, listen, if your parents hit you, call the police, you know. So, I mean, kids that threaten their parents, you know, I call the police on you, you know, if you try to discipline.
Yeah, but that's,
so what do you do?
But that's not the only way that you can chastise a kid. If you start out, you know, somewhere along the way, and if you looked at each one of those cases individually, you would find that there were some things that that parent or those parents allowed to go on that planted the seed in that child's mind that they could get away with that. And you don't have to be beating them all the time. Who raised their kids and they never hit them, but they're not disrespectful because they teach them by sitting down, being involved with them. You take like when my grandfather was alive and when dinner was served, I don't care whether you wanted to eat dinner or not. You had to come to the table and sit there because it was a family affair. That was the time when everybody had an opportunity to talk about what happened at school today, what you've been doing, how you're feeling, and that was going to happen. And I didn't realize that I used to get pissed myself. Why does he make us come to the table when we don't want nothing to eat? It was maintaining order in that house. You have people now, and I know for a fact, not what somebody told me, where they have never set a dinner or breakfast with their children. Never. Because they're so busy out here chasing the so-called American dream that they ain't got time to interact with their kids. So it's
not just
about
people. If anybody's listening right now, if you have a question or comment for Dr. Kwaku, press the number one on your phone, and we will entertain your question or comment. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so I
mean,
it's just a matter of...
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's just a matter of changing our outlook and not operating off of, you know, where I come from, they didn't care what went on in the neighbor's house. They just told you what was going to go on in their house, you know. And so we weren't guided by parents hit me, I'm going to call somebody or whatever. You understand what I'm saying? And so this is all new stuff. But there's something that is awfully wrong in the way we are raising our children for it to even rise to that level. A lot of these seeds are planted. You know, they say a child's personality is formed by the time they're 5 years old. A lot of these seeds are planted way back there that give the child. You ever seen been around people and their kids will hit them? You know, like when they're small, they'll hit them and they'll play with them. Well, the thing about it is if you allow that stuff, if you allow that stuff, guess what happens in that child's mind? And the fact that they get older and start to rehash some of the more learned behaviors, you can't blame the child for that. You blame the parent. Because my kids are grown, but I tell you, I said, hey, anytime one of y'all get that kind of a thing in your mind, you have to find someplace else to live. You can't come in here and tell me how to run my house. And you will follow the rules in my house. If curfew is at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock, you be in the house at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock. You can't call me on the phone and say, well, I'm gonna be a little late and come in at 12 or 1. You understand what I'm saying? You have to have order.
Right.
And if you don't have order, out of disorder comes all of this shit stuff that we're talking about.
Dr. Kwaku, let me interrupt you for a second and just reintroduce you. We're listening to Dr. Nenana Kwaku today. He has a degree in psychology, a master's degree in social work. He spent 45 years working in the Bay Area creating and running programs for men and women and families. He's written two books. One is Ordinary Dads in Search of Manhood, and the other one is White Out, which deals with how black thought is overridden by white philosophy. If anyone has a question or comment, press the number one on your phone, and we will entertain your question or comment. Dr. Kwaku, so go ahead.
Yeah, and that's another thing about this whole White Out. Now African people are trying to raise their kids the way European culture raises their kids. So, and you know, I'm sure you know the difference. White kids talk to their parents in a kind of way. You see it out in stores and supermarkets and different places. That never used to happen with our people. But because you got these new things and these new laws, and tell your child, well, you call the police if your parent strikes you or whatever. And I'm not a proponent of somebody beating kids all the time. But whatever you are doing in that household needs to be codified on a day-to-day basis that there's certain behaviors are not going to be tolerated. And they don't make no difference about the system. Our folks would have told us, I don't care what, they would have told us, well, if you call the police when they get you, you may not be alive. You know, you're not meaning it literally, you know? But that's the kind of stuff they told us. We knew we could not cross our parents. We knew that we could not disrespect that house. And it didn't make any difference about what nobody thought outside of that realm. So we have to get back to doing how African people raise their children. And that's part of that whole miseducation thing. Well, we this big melting pot and we all won and there's no such thing as race. If there was no such thing as race, we wouldn't still be struggling for rights. Our people will never become consistently ingratiated with acting European because it's not natural. It's only natural to be yourself. When you have to do something, you ever seen people who to them and they sound like they're white? And I'm not saying anything about it. This has nothing to do with speaking appropriate English. But they kids are being trained that if you don't speak a certain way, you may not get into this company. You may not get the job. You can't go in there sounding like you're black. You can't sound like something else. You have to sound the way that's acceptable to them. And you see it in the newscasters. People come on there. I remember when this sister was over at Channel 4, and they fired her because she had her dreadlocks. And it had nothing to do with her brain and her ability to go and get a degree from Stanford in communications, you know? And you have to sound a certain way, and you have to look a certain way. And so we are being transformed to act like something that we're not, which is what creates this whole psychological discombobulation in terms of how we act. We're so disorganized. How come we lack the ability to fix our own problems? We shouldn't be asking anybody to fix our problems. We can fix them ourselves. What was that song, James?
Right,
made
right.
Back
that's a quick.
I don't want anybody to give me nothing
quick,
over
cool,
the talk.
Let me just interrupt you for a second. This show usually lasts for about an hour. We're about to go over that, so would it be okay for you to stay with us a little few more minutes?
Sure. Yeah, go ahead. Anybody have a question?
Yeah, I have a question that we talked about, and I want to clarify for people that might be listening. We talked about what is CRT or critical race theory. Why is there such an uproar about it?
First of all, there are people who just grabbed it and started running with it, critical race theory. Critical race theory is really, it's a legal theory. It's only taught in law school. And what it does, it relates to how law has created race. You know, you have different rules for different people based in this country, which goes all the way back to slavery. It goes back to the Dred Scott thing, where what was the judge said that black people had no rights that white people were obligated to respect. I don't know if you remember that Dred Scott decision.
Oh yeah.
And then it's another part of the critical race theory is the law sustains racism in society by the separation of these different groups. So that's what critical race theory is. And then when the lady from New York Times and a group of people, wasn't just her, come up with the 1619 Project, where basically they were just saying, okay, we want you to teach the truth, you know. And they didn't ask them to teach this in grade school. Critical race theory isn't being taught in any school in America unless you're in law school. This is one of the things, it's like a battle cry for the so-called white establishment or these racists who think that they rule this country and who want to continue to rule it. And the way they do it is by keeping people divided. And so what they did was they tried to pull it off in the election by saying they're teaching our kids critical race theory, making their kids feel bad about being American. And so when the people come up with the 1619 Project, teaching them about real history and what was done to African people, and even when you bring up stuff like Tulsa and St. Louis and Rosewood, they don't think this stuff should be taught. In fact, they're taking books out of the school now that may in some way shed a bad light on European culture. But, you know, you can't hide the truth. How are you going to hide the truth? You're talking about a group of people who come here and displaced the whole race of people, Native Americans, took their land and moved them back on reservation. They brought Africans here and put them in slavery. There's nothing that they have not done to African people during slavery, during Jim Crow, and it continues today. This critical race theory was just a battle cry for them to get the codified out people, get them together, saying that they're trying to take over. And in fact, if you probably heard this saying, you will not replace us. You will not replace us.
Yes.
They're thinking that by, I think they're saying in 2040, that all of the different races will outnumber the so-called European population. And so the vote will be really taken away from them. That's why they do everything they can to try to manipulate the laws around voting, because the objective is to stop you from having any power, and they're not going to relinquish it. They're even talking about another war, you know, like the war between the states, because they don't want to give up their power. And here's another thing I like to say. If you study history, and you can go back, you can read Chancellor Williams' Destruction of Black Civilization. You can go back and read John Henry Clark. You can read Dr. Ben Yohanan. And you read these people, and for thousands and thousands of years, there has never been a society on earth that allowed the so-called minority groups to rise up and equal to them in power. They usually were destroyed. Somehow they, just because of war, Greece failed. Kemet failed, but it failed because of internal strife. And what we are going to experience now is internal strife, because these people came here, they took this country, and they think, wow, this is our country. This is our country, and nobody's going to take it back. And they think that just the fact that they allow you to be equal to them in power, in politics, in law enforcement, in making the rules, that somehow that will eliminate their power hole. So that's what really comes down to with critical race theory.
Oh, okay. Well, Dr. Kwaku, it's really been nice having you on the show today. Got to invite you back soon, because there were some subjects that we didn't get a chance to talk about. And maybe we can highlight them if you have a few minutes. We talked about anger management a little bit today. We talked about the parenting roles of men and women. But lastly, about your behavior modification classes, can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, the thing of it is people use it, when you talk about behavior modification, it's just a term. It's not, the classes are not the term that. People used to get referred in for anger management, or they get thrown out of school, or they're having trouble with their parents, for whatever. And my thing is, along with a lot of other people, not just me by myself, people that I work with, is that we try to figure out what's wrong, how did the problem develop to the level that it is at this point, and then we put together a program. Yeah, and it's going to be different for different people. You know, so it's not a one-size-fits-all or one thing that's going to correct all of the problems. It's just that we have to set the problem down, and we look at it, we measure it, figure out how it started, and we figure out here's what we can do to eliminate it. And so that's what behavior modification really is. If you're a person that gets angry every day, or you're always angry, you're always yelling, or you can't control yourself when somebody says something that offends you, and without you acting out physically, then we have to teach people skills. It may be anything from counting, from meditation, from deep breathing, reading, or going off by yourself by the water. It could be any number of things, of prayer and meditation. And sometimes people who are not really connected on a spiritual plane, you have to basically teach them what that means. Because, like you said, we were talking about church a while ago, and they want to maintain the status quo as church has existed in this country for thousands, hundreds of years. But sometimes people, that's why when you go to talk to people about spirituality, they don't understand what you mean. What do you mean spirituality? It's, I can't touch it. I can't feel it. I can't see it. Yes, you can. You can see it. You can touch it. And it's important that you do that. Because if you can't touch your spirit, if you can't feel your spirit, then you're not really a complete viable human being. And so I try to get people in, and I don't care how young they are, unless they're little kids, you know, 4 or 5 years old. People seek ways to, you know, attain power, and not over other people, but power over themselves. I want to have power over me because I don't want to have anger outbursts. So I have to give them some tools. What's going to work? What may work for John may not work for Willie or Mario here. So it's different for different people. Depends on where they are, what the issues are when they come in that you're going to be working on in terms of behavior modification. Because behavior modification pretty much includes pretty much everything on the planet. You know?
Right. Dr. Kwaku, it's the last question. Because I don't want to wear you out and so you don't want to come back on the show anymore.
Oh, no. That's not, brother. It's fine.
Now, at some point in the past, you changed your name to reflect your culture. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Actually, at that time, I was in with Kwame Ture. You know who Kwame Ture is, right? That was his name was Stokely Carmichael before he changed his name. Back he was one of the revolutionary people. Yeah. So, in fact, when I got to Oakland, you know, I became involved with them. And, you know, as I started to read, I was already studying and reading and studying history and trying to understand this whole thing. And they suggested to me that, hey, man, why are you still walking around with the slave master's name? And I said, well, I don't know. I guess I'd never really thought about it in that context. And, you know, so what I did at that point was I started reading stuff on name change and the purpose of names. And on the continent, people have names, and they a lot of times they have meaning. You heard the brother that came on before, and he said from a child born on Friday to a child born on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
You remember the brother? Okay. Well, my name is Kwaku. My name is Kwaku, my last name, which means man born on Wednesday, because I was born on a Wednesday. And Ninana means chief, you know. So in the African culture, when people choose names, they usually choose a name that fits your personality. In fact, in the early part of this country, people would have their kids run around 5 or 6 years old and hadn't even given them a name yet. They'd be calling them Pookie and all kinds of stuff. And a lot of people didn't know that, but it was something, part of the culture that came in from Africa with them, where kids in Africa were allowed to choose their own name. It was kind of like when Jewish kids have a bar mitzvah or whatever. Well, when a kid reached a certain age, they would allow them to choose the name that they felt good about who they were. So names have meaning. And so my name means, what is it? It means chief, born on Wednesday. And somebody else's name maybe means something else. Like my son's name is Hashim, which means quiet warrior. But they have meaning. And people tend to take pride in their name. You ever hear people talking about, I hate my name. I don't know why nobody named me this. Because there's no connection. You know, you are connected to something. And so once we get back to this whole connectivity thing in terms of the ancestors, in terms of the spiritual nature of who our people were, we stop being religious and we start being spiritual and we get in touch with the reality of who we are and who we were created to be.
Once
I made that decision, I just went and, you know, I had the paperwork, everything changed, and had it changed.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm certainly happy to have you on the show today. I'd like to invite you back again real soon.
Just give me a couple of days' notice, and, you know, I'd be glad to come on, man. No problem.
Okay. Well, everybody, thank you for calling in today. Let me just put a plug out for myself and the show. I do life insurance, long-term care, and legacy planning. If you have any needs for anything like that, my phone number is 916-667-4974. And with that, we're going to wrap it up for this week. Dr. Kwaku, thanks again for coming on the show. And whoever listening, thank you for listening in today. All right, everybody, have a great weekend. And next weekend, giving, so I don't know about that. So, but you can call the number. All right, we'll wrap it up. Everybody, thanks for calling today.
All right, goodbye.